What up? Welcome to another episode of 94 Feet with Coach JT. Please leave a like or a comment below. Just let me know what you think as I continue to grow and expand this podcast. Today, got a dope guest again. All my guests are dope, so I always say that. But this gentleman grew up in Alabama. He was actually, we got the same birthday, July 26th. Born in Jasper, Alabama. Went to Lawson State Community College. From there, he went on to fellow SWAC school, Alabama A&M University in Huntsville, Alabama. While at Alabama A&M, at some point in time, he led the nation in block shots per game at 6.3. Also, man, he set the Division I single game record with 16 blocks against Texas Southern on February 24th. He began his professional career in the Netherlands after going undrafted in 2008. However, in 2011, my guest debuted in the NBA with the Miami Heat, Mikael Gladness. How you doing, man? How's it going?
Doing good.
Man, I appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking time out your day. And like the show says, 94 feet, we're going to jump right into it. Man, tell me a little bit about Jasper, Alabama, my man. How's it going up there? Where's Jasper at?
Man, Jasper is a little north of Birmingham.
Okay.
It was the younger years when I spent in Jasper. I'm in elementary school, that kind of stuff. It's a little faint memories here and there, but it's part of me. That's not what I claim as far as like where I'm from.
Okay.
That's my beginnings. My beginnings right there.
So that's where it started. Then we're all big on where you're from. Where would you say you grew up or where you're from after Jasper?
Yeah, I always like equate like where you're from as to like where the thing that kind of molded you during those real pivotal years. And I would say Sylacauga, Chillsburg, Sylacauga area. Well, we could just go ahead and sum it up, say Talladega County. And just put it like that, because that's my I grew up as far as from middle school and on up, from the years that really mattered as far as playing basketball, as far as like the stuff I really remember. I feel like the stuff that made me who I am right now. So Sylacauga, Chillsburg, still both real small towns, pretty rural for the most part. But I mean, who don't need a field every now and then to run around in, let off some energy. So I mean. Playing basketball on dirt courts, running around in the fields. I mean, that was my childhood.
Dope. So I definitely hear with that. My nephew's people is from Talladega out that way. So okay, we talk about basketball, but again, down south, has basketball been the only sport, or what other things growing up you said dirt fields and basketball courts. What other sports or activities did you take place in through that, you know, in them younger years, man? Or was it always hoop?
I played a little bit of baseball. Being a catcher, that was always fun for me. Played a little football. Football was like, that was my thing, but I feel like at ninth, 10th grade, it was like, all right, I might not be a professional football player. I got to make a choice. So, I mean, especially going to school where they don't really throw the ball that much, and I was a receiver, it wasn't that fun. I'm not going to be blocking the whole time. That's not what I'm coming out here to do. It's not fun. So, but football was one of my things. Like, I always – I remember playing in the yard with my dad, running routes, passing the ball. I wanted to be a quarterback, but receiver was the second choice. Like I said, when you don't get the ball thrown your way yourself maybe three times a season, that was easy. I let that go. I'll stick with basketball.
Cool. On the football tip, growing up, who was the football kind of people you looked up to being from the South, man? Football's heavy down there, man. Anybody kind of stick out that just made you kind of just pick it up a little bit?
I mean – as far as we don't have an NFL team, so it's all Alabama. Like you got to be one or the other when you're growing up. So I mean, it's still split in my family right now. But right. Alabama has a rich heritage. But as far as NFL wise, I had Randy Moss, long, lean, can run, like real nice, real soft hands, catch anything you throw towards him. That was one of my idols right there.
Yep. So we talked about growing up playing baseball, the sports. At this point, let's go middle school, man. How tall were you in middle school, to say?
I was a late bloomer, actually. I remember people being taller than me. Actual height, do I remember that? I think I was at least 6'1", 6'2".
Right.
But I still remember this guy, Jacob Borg. He was taller than me the whole time. Like, everybody, I guess, expected me to be taller because of my dad, but... Mm-hmm. Jacob, he was always, they was always, it was always guys taller than me until about I say my freshman to sophomore year in high school, and that's where I kind of gained a little ground on.
Right. So as we know, like going, you playing professional, and as far as the the advantages players have now and kids have now. Where did you, you said playing on dirt courts. What did you put your work in at back then, man? Because, you had outside courts or blacktops or a old school or something like that. What was most of your work in your area put in at?
Even back then, the advantage they have as far as, people training them, it wasn't training like that back then. It was I go out and I hoop. I go play 2-on-2, wherever I can play it, mm-hmm. can play the game. That's what it was. It wasn't until later, maybe high school, where it was kind of broken down to me as far as defensively, the footwork, and actually put in the work to get your footwork together and to slide with the player and what to look at on their body as far as when they moving, to know and try to predict passing lanes and predicting when they gonna shoot the ball and staying down on pump fakes, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until later why I kind of picked that up. I think most of my work actually happened when I met my middle school coach, Bobby Hall. So 10th grade, where it really started to start working, my dad would always train me a little bit, in the driveway, where I remember we would do, jab one side, just drive to the other side, lay up, that kind of stuff. But it wasn't as detailed and stuff as it is now.
Right. That was definitely for sure. So, high school career, what school are you at, man, at that point in time? What school did you go to for high school?
Little College High School. That's why I started my high school career.
So, 9th grade. Okay. So give me a few highlights, man. Like I said, that's where it really started to grow. Give me a couple of highlights. Did you go straight to varsity? I know Alabama, it's also different. You could be in middle school and play, high school basketball, I believe, or a freshman or something like that. Yeah. And so where would you, as far as, I guess, going 9th grade, did you get me to play varsity or what?
Like I said, first of all, I went to a pretty big high school, so we were 5A. I don't know if you know the classifications.
Right. So I think for everybody else listening, sorry, 5A here is for us Division I. That's the one is our biggest, so it's 5A down south is big.
Yeah, so it's 5A, then 6A is the biggest. But I wasn't good enough. I frail's tall, frail little kid, ran all day, every day. But that's pretty much what I had. Long arms, you can see it was potential there. It was room to grow into my frame, but I hadn't yet. But that's what I had, and that's what I had to work with. So, I was on the 9th grade team. I think I played junior varsity, and towards the end of that sophomore year, I was fortunate enough to get towards area tournament. They put me on the varsity team, but I didn't play. I was just there. I was there to get that experience. If we were blowing somebody out or somebody blowing us out, I get in the game. It didn't really happen until junior year. I was still pretty good. I actually got the opportunities that I feel like I should have gotten. Senior year, what kind of broke out, and everybody kind of knew who I was. But it was still, I wasn't getting the looks that I wanted. I had UAB that kind of talked to me. North Texas was the main people that kind of wrote me letters and sent me the little pamphlets. But it's like, are they really interested in me, or is it like a student type of thing? Like, you're not sending me anything special. But I was still getting pamphlets. So, late bloomer on all that.
Yeah. Okay. So you go through this process, right? Are we 100% dedicated to the basketball life at this point, saying this is what we want to do? Or are you I'm going to keep doing it to try to see what opportunities come? Or you knew then I want to make some of this at that point in high school or no?
My making some of it in high school was I want to go play college ball. I still remember one time I'm sitting in a gym with my high school coach. And I think it's a tournament. So we watching the other teams play. And I say I want to be a McDonald's All-American. I want to play for North Carolina, because that's the staple. That's what I know. I know Michael Jordan. I know North Carolina. You put those two together, that's correlation. But I didn't think far ahead. NBA was a great dream, but it wasn't I want to be in the NBA. I want to play in the NBA. I think that kind of evolved because I saw how much I had grown, how much my skill had progressed. Especially as far as blocking shots and how valuable it was to teams. And that's when it came to be like, oh, okay, I can do something more than just what I'm limiting myself right now. So think bigger. But in high school, it was more so that did turn into okay, I want to keep going with this. But how far? Never knew that. Never thought about that much.
Okay, so senior year, how does Lawson State, especially, again, you know, people have their whatever say about JCs. I'm a JC kid. And it paid off for, I mean, I said I wouldn't change it for the world. How did Lawson State become that choice at that point in time for you?
Like I said, I had a couple of people that recruit team. I mean, schools that recruited me. They weren't heavy on me. They were saying I needed more experience. I needed this. I needed that. No scholarships were offered. I had to figure out what was next. Almost as soon as the season was over in high school, my head coach took me to Lawson State, which was right down, 40 minutes down the street. Tried out there. We basically just, they put us in the gym with their guys. And some of the guys, well, that was like four guys that came from high school and went also. And we just played. We played full court. We went up. We just got up and down. Got out. They offered me a scholarship that day after the game. I mean, after the pickup game, that there was history. Like, I go from no scholarships to you offer me a full scholarship, don't have to pay for anything, I'll take it. Right. That's pretty much how it happened.
Yeah. So, and not too far from home, that point, that road, take that road trip. So that was a plus, yeah, too, right? Not too far, but still get to grow. You go there, first one season there, like, what's the biggest jump you would say you made in your game to be able to be productive, even more productive going into the JC level? What was something you definitely picked up over that summer, that transition there to get ready to play?
I think junior college really allows people, not the huge jump, but just like a minor incremental change, jump that kind of is not a shock to your body, not a shock to your game. It gives you a little more time to kind of tweak things and get the confidence. That was the big thing for me. Experience has always been a thing, because even growing up younger, my dad was a coach. My dad would coach me and my brother when we in, like, you know, the little leagues and stuff like that. But, you know, on other teams, we didn't get to play. I didn't get to play that much. So the playing experience was crucial for my development. And I think that's what happened. Like, Lawson State towards the end of the year, towards JUCO tournament time, I got a lot of playing time. He started to see how valuable I was, how much I can play. And I gained that confidence. And that's kind of what set me. That's kind of what set me on the right track.
Nice playing time. You do the year there, and again, knowing what's how things work now. Back then, did you already know it was probably one and done, or you just kind of again went with it and then the next opportunity unfolded, right?
I always had the grades, but like I said, I didn't have the exposure that I feel like I needed and I wanted, and the offers as well. But the thing that really made me choose to only go 1 year is because the coach there, I'll put it like this. I was soft as far as like mentally. I'm not used to coaches. I wasn't really used to coaches like yelling at me a lot. And so when I get there and he yelled at me, but I feel like he took it to another level. I won't repeat. It's one particular quote that I'll never forget. Okay, I'm out of here. Like, I feel like I've shown what I can do. And after one of my games in the junior college tournament or whatever, for the state tournament, Elder Manum came and talked to me. Okay, I mean, again, from no offers yet, because I was assuming I was going to play 2 years there at JUCO, from no offers in that first year to right after the season, like a D1, Division I school offers me, I got something to think about now. So when I get that interest and they just keep talking to me, keep calling, my high school coach once again said, go where you want it. Not go to who wants you, mm-hmm. not to who you want. I mean, that sums it up. So I thought about it with my family, my father. It was like, it might not be the big Division I's you wanted, but you play against the big Division I teams. They have a great school. The opportunity is there. So that's how I chose that part.
Facts. You talk about, spoke to you. I see, you know, your dad's come up a lot as far as working with you and talking to you. Just, I mean, you and his relationship, how was that growing up being the coach? And because, I mean, again, now coaching myself, you see the parent, they call it however parents, vice versa, relationship with kids. How was you guys' relationship growing up, man, just overall?
Well, I kind of saw my dad, like, I was towards the end. Well, I didn't see his playing career, but you see the pictures and stuff all over the house. I saw him playing men's league. I saw him like commentating games and stuff like that. So he grew up playing basketball. He didn't make it as far as I did for whatever reason. I think it was a hamstring injury, which now it wouldn't have been no problem. Mm-hmm. But I respected him, and that was our thing that we really bonded over. Like we're working on it now, even now, but we didn't have those deep conversations about other things. Mm-hmm. But basketball was that thing we could connect on. So that was always something we sat and talked about. I mean, the dynamic as far as him being a coach, it was no problem to me, because like I said, what he said about basketball, not always about everything else, what he said about basketball, I trusted it.
That was dope. Yeah, I mean, it was visually there too for you to see it and validate. So that's real dope. You get to A&M, man. You get to the SWAT. What's the when you get to that hill, man? What's your first con? What you think when you first get on campus, man?
It was overwhelming, mainly because like even going to junior college, like it was in Birmingham, right? I went next to the hood, so you get that dynamic of like majority black. But when I get to Alabama A&M, it's a different story. So I'm like, wow, like I'm not used to this. Where are these people? What are minorities at?
Right.
This is majority now. Like, who are the minorities now? But that was refreshing to me also.
Cool.
It took a little while. It took a little bit to get used to, because it's like I'm used to seeing, white people all the time. Yeah. But to see people in positions of power, that was kind of like my first taste of that. Mm-hmm. And it was refreshing. It kind of gave me a little bit more hope. Like, man, they can do this. I can do this. They here to help me. They want to see me succeed because they look just like me. Mm-hmm. So that really boosted my morale as far as, and changed my perception of college and everything.
Nice. Dope. During that time, again, they talk about transition. Now you go again, like you said, you play against big D1s, you play against other schools, come from JC. What's the step up now? Is it weights? Is it eating better? What's next for you as far as the physical part that had to increase or anything?
Oh yeah. I remember shakes. it was like Slim Fast shakes. It was just to add something boost shakes, boost and Slim Fast. Yeah. Then we had Gatorade shakes. Like it was all that stuff to kind of add extra calories. Mm-hmm. Did a little more lifting than I did in high school, but it still wasn't like a whole lot. It was so sporadic that it was like I might should have lifted more, gained a little bit of weight here and there. I think I more so learned how to use my size and my quickness that other players didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked a lot. We worked more individually. I had a coach, Sammy Jackson, that really took me under his wing. He would take me to his house sometimes. His son was on our team, so he really took me on his wing, and he's the one that kind of talked to the scouts and stuff, and kind of knew what I need to work on, knew what kind of stats I need to have to like, better my chances to get into the NBA. So I think it was working with him during the summers, and we would come in early before the season started, and they would have individual workouts and stuff. So I never had done that before, really, to really focus on getting that hook shot down. So let's get these reps in.
Mm-hmm.
Run the floor, duck in, work on when you catch your hands when you're catching the ball, just to make sure you got a firm grip on the ball before you try to go up. When somebody's slapping at your hands, I had that all the time. Mm-hmm. Since I'm taller, I mean, if you can't get, you're trying to get it down low before I get it up. So working on that kind of stuff that I never really even thought about, or the stuff that really bothered me, but I didn't know how to address it, that really helped around that time.
Right. So we talked about coming from a small environment. As we know, when your first, let's see, big SWAT game with a crowd, I would go to the Alabama State game. How was that for you? How was you walk to that environment, see all them people dressed up, whatever, just basketball alone? How was that coming from a small place and then now getting to an environment where it's rocking in the gym?
I didn't know how to handle that, man. But I took it like it's always been like when I get my first block, mm-hmm. my first little bit of action, the nerves gone.
The guy, okay.
It's time to play. Like I'm comfortable now. I don't hear anybody else off the court. Of course, I hear you hear a little chirping from the coach, mm-hmm. your coach a little bit, but everybody else is blacked out. Like I don't see it. It's game time now. Just me, the court, you, whoever's on it.
So, man, what are you remember, what are some of the big games? I mean, outside of that game, we talked about Texas Southern. Or actually, let's talk about that Texas Southern game, man. The 16 blocks, was that at TSU or at home?
No, we were at home.
Okay, so.
And everybody asked me, like, all right, so what were you thinking? What were they thinking? Bro, it was all based on feel. Like, my whole game, as far as blocking shots, is based on feel, timing. If I can predict, I have to predict when you're going to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. Or try to predict. Most of the time, like, especially in that game, I was right. But you're taking a chance because you sometimes get you up in there and get you a foul.
Yeah.
But they just kept coming to the rim. Like, it seemed like after I blocked at least five shots,
you would stop.
They would shoot more jumpers. But I think, I don't know, us as men, we're going to keep trying you. Like, it's that pride. Like, it's like, he blocked my shot that time, but he didn't give me this time. I'm going back in there. Like, he's not going to stop me from laying the ball up or getting an easy basket. Mm-hmm. So they just kept coming. I kept timing it right, and the rest, crazy. That's what we started.
Yeah, 16 is a lot, bro. That's ridiculous right there. Before we got off of A&M real quick, homecoming. Because I know, I'm not sure if you've been to a one before out there, but now that's crazy. Anywhere in the SWAC. How much of a good time was that for you, and a shocker initially was that for you seeing that one time and then going forward? Like,
I would say I learned about nutrition and hydration during homecoming.
Fact. Especially down there, brother, for sure.
Yeah, we'll put it there. I mean, the band was always something that, like, since I'm from around the area, Madison City Classic and stuff, mm-hmm. I would always go to the parade. So the band was the first thing. Like, I'm going to Alabama A&M. Yep, the band. But it's stuff way more than that I didn't even think about. Like, mm-hmm. now that I was older and I could actually participate in those activities. But it was wild. Like, that's some of the fondest memories. Staying up all night,
yep.
Going from this club to the gym party or to mm-hmm. a comedy show that they had. I mean, you have some people like Michael Blackston and people like that coming to our school, and I'm like, these people I see on TV, mm-hmm. BET or what? I mean, you know what I mean? I think we had Big Tigger or somebody come. Like, I see him on the basement. Like, I used to run home to watch stuff on TV, and now he right here, right in front of me. So that was a really good experience.
Yeah, super dope. All that. Finish at A&M, leave A&M, you put your name in the draft. Initially. Just how much confidence, because I know, I mean, talk to a lot of different guys. How much confidence were you, or I'm not confident, how hesitant or scared were you to put your name in there and make that next jump? Or was it like, I know this is what I'm doing, I'm getting there?
Honestly, I wanted to put my name in the draft my junior year. After I set that record, mm-hmm. and after I was first in the nation in blocks, I feel like I should put in that in. Head coach ended up talking me out of it, and I always think about, man, was he really advising me on mm-hmm. what I should do, or was he doing it for the school and the team mm-hmm. on me coming back? But I wasn't really hesitant. I was already predicted second round. But as long as I was in the conversation, I was like, okay, I got a chance. So it was no reason for me to stay at school, in my opinion. At school, I did school to play basketball. Mm-hmm. That was my thing. Now I look back and I'm like, okay, I could have went a little harder, did a little more studying in school. But like I said, I did school, at that time did enough to play basketball, make sure I'm on the court. So that wasn't a hard decision for me. I feel like it was a natural decision. That was something that kind of just slowed. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to think that much about that. Because even if I didn't get in the draft, which I didn't at that time, I can go somewhere else. I was gonna make way more money than I was in school.
True. So to not go undrafted, initially, before you made the transition, you already said you knew that you're going to go somewhere else, though. But a little bit of a letdown to you, or a little bit of like a disappointment before you get ready to shift over to overseas or wherever else? Or what's your thought right there after that initial, like, dang, I didn't get that call?
Oh, for sure. I had a workout with the Detroit Pistons like the day of the draft. It's some European guy, I don't remember his name now, but I fly back home, and I'm just waiting in front of the computer, in front of the TV, just waiting to hear my name called. So I mean, so yeah, it was let down. Even if it would have been second round, I would have been super excited, but not to hear your name called at all. Yeah, it sucked. But it was motivation, because I feel like I had all these workouts. I had some homeboys, didn't have none, mm-hmm. didn't have any. So So I'm like, I had all these workouts and I'm telling people about where I'm going. I'm flying to Cavaliers training facility. I got working out with Roy Hibbert. I got Cavs gear, all this kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, back, especially back then, like NBA gear was hot. Like, let me get a pair of shorts.
Hey, get a practice jersey. Yeah.
So that was that sparked the fire up under me. So it gave me even more hope because I knew that I was on people's radars. And when people think about you, then it gives you that much more of a shot.
That's cool. So make this transition. Was Netherlands your first stop out of there, or was your first stop after going undrafted?
Yeah, I had a few options to go to the D League, and also to go to like France, something like that. But knowing those places, the D League has so much player turnover that you never know how much you're gonna play, and that's what they were saying. I still need more experience, and in France they were like, it's a bigger team, but we don't know how much you're gonna play there either. So I chose to go to the route where I figured would be the smarter route and get what they said I needed, experience.
So now you're leaving. You're not leaving the state. You're leaving the country.
Yeah.
What's that feeling like? Or how did your parents feel about that point?
You can do all the research you want on what to expect when going to whatever country or how they live or what they eat. It's not going to go on. Prepare you for any over there. I think my parents, my daddy, he was just like, this is your job now. Go make that money, basically. You don't get people, a lot of people don't get this opportunity. He was like, I didn't get this opportunity because of what happened to me as far as my hamstring or whatever. So go, this is your time. Go do it. My mother, since I had been 2 hours away and I didn't come, it's 2 hours away as opposed to 9-hour flight, but I'll be back. My mother understood that I had to go and pursue my career, so it wasn't too bad.
Nice. So take a trip over there. Any hard downfalls while you was there initially that first year? Anything like kind of I need to come home or
was it that first year? The transition from college into professional, no matter how big of a jump or how big the league is over there, it's tough. It's a different type of physicality. Like I went from playing with people my age to I had a guy on my team. I think he was 38 or something like that.
Man, yeah.
So I'm 22 years old playing with against 38 year olds, and he just banging and bumping like. I'm not used to that. The speed of the game also, we ran pick and roll in college at A&M, but in Europe, pick and roll is like, that's the bread and butter right there. Like you gotta know your footwork for pick and roll. You gotta know your placement as far as where you, the target, where you sit, when you set in the pick and roll, getting out of pick and roll and getting to the rim. Certain things you have to adjust to when people, after you dominate a pick and roll, people gonna start bumping you when you come down the lane. So you got to know how to get around that. Like it's so many different aspects of the game that I never thought about. Actually, I'm just thinking about, okay, I'm gonna go here and play. I just had these NBA workouts. I'm ready for the NBA. I'm just gonna show them, and sooner or later I'll be back over here in the NBA. Right. It was a rude awakening. Honestly, that year in Holland, I almost got cut. Like I was on the cusp of getting cut. Like my agent had to renegotiate my contract to basically take everything they was gonna take away from me, or they were talking about taking away from me or deducting from my contract. And we just put in the bonuses. So I end up getting every bonus that they kind of took away from me. Jeez. But just the almost getting cut that year, they were ready to send me home. Like seriously, almost getting cut that year. I start finding myself after that because it was like, okay, I'm not going back home. I can't go back home. Like, not like this. And so I end up finding my game and getting more confident and basically just playing like I have nothing to lose. So I got all the bonuses back because I think one of the bonuses were like a certain amount of block per game or certain amount of rebounds per game, and I like I said, I reached them. But that was the first lesson on the business of basketball.
Back against the wall, okay. You spent a couple of years overseas, actually, and I'm saying you get back to the States in what, 09, Rio Grande, and then Dakota Wizards also. So being back home and back in the U.S. in the States, comfortable right there. And that's back then it was D-League still. Right there, what is that? What's your mindset going at this point now? Like, okay, look, is your one step closer you feeling or what?
I did feel like I was one step closer, like the atmosphere you get from the D-League, especially Rio Grande. Rio Grande was probably one of the first teams that actually had a real affiliate. Mm-hmm. So the Rockets was the sole affiliate for Rio Grande. But so we got all the trickle-down effect. Like, you remember the first, like, when people was doing heart rate monitors and stuff to kind of judge your fitness and stuff, that we were doing that. So we were always the ones that was, like, the guinea pigs for the Rockets. Mm-hmm. They would do analytics off us. So, like, if you come down, like, now they have, like the Rockets say, well, before, if you don't come down and shoot a layup, I mean, don't shoot, come no down and shoot up. A mid-range shot, no pull-ups, you shoot a three, or you shoot a layup. Mm-hmm. You shoot it in the corner because that's the highest percentage, or you shoot it at the top of the key. Like, that was us. They came with that from us. And you would see, like, thick books of percentages and shot charts and stuff like that. So it made me feel like, all right, that Holland was like, that was minor leagues. Like I'm like, it's like you said, I'm one step closer to being in the NBA because this feels almost like it. Like, if I can imagine being in the NBA, this close to what it would feel like, because they took care of us as far as of course jerseys, they had nutrition, they had shakes and stuff after practices. We had a weight room right there. We had a practice facility, nice arena. So I mean, that made me feel like I was closer, which gave me the push to be like, okay, we almost there. Right. I'm almost there.
Okay, dope. 2011 comes about. Now, how do you get that call or that first opportunity, man, to put on that NBA? Even if it's a practice, if it's a call up, what happens? How does that take place, man?
The year before that, after the season, they have some every year called like the D League Elite mini camp or something like that. I got invited to that, which I really didn't think I would. So I'm like, young player, when I play, I'm really effective, but I didn't play as much as I wanted to. But I got there to the D League Elite mini camp and I killed it. I played really well. Cause I don't know these guys. I mean, I know these guys, I played against these guys, but I have no plays, no preset expectations about me, at least what I knew of from other coaches that were like kind of coaching me in this camp. It was just kind of like, go out and play. So a little bit after the D-League Elite mini camp, Miami calls my agent and he's like, we have this guy here in Miami that's kind of been working out with us. He's good, but we're a running team. We're a fast paced team and he doesn't quite fit the description. So we like you. Would you come in? This was set up just for a one weekend thing. I was supposed to go to my first time would have been going to Carnival in Canada. Supposed to go there. But I couldn't because they had just called me like wanted to come to Miami. So that's another story. But I went there that one weekend and it just kept on turning to another weekend and another weekend and another week and another week. Next thing you know, I'm in training camp. After they let me know I was in training camp, right before that, that's when LeBron signs. So I'm in an intercontinental hotel in Miami, and I just hear people like yelling and horns blowing and stuff. I'm like, what happened? Look, turn on the channel on the ESPN. LeBron just signed, took his talents to Miami, the South Beach. So that year I didn't make it through training camp. It was a good experience, but LeBron already kind of brought his guys, Big Z, Jamal McGlure, Howard. They already had their spots. I think it was one spot available, and it wasn't for a big man. So I go back to D-League for maybe, I think we played like three or four games, and I get a call again from Miami like, all right, the lockout is over. We want you to come back to training camp. And I just played really free. Played like I knew I belonged there. Like I had nothing to lose. That was, I think that I played the best when I'm just free. And it was actually one spot left then, too. But I played so well, and then my teammate played so well that they end up cutting Eddie House to make two spots for us. And so December 25th, 2011.
Oh, wow.
I got signed to a contract with Miami.
Wow. Best Christmas present of what? So you get that, again, all the work, man. Like I said, your resume, your journeyman, a young journeyman still. But just how, I don't know, just tell me about that feeling, man. Like I said, I mean, for you, for your parents, whatever, what was that? Oh, what about the calls? Let's say, what do you do? Who do you call first when they offer you? Who's your first call to?
Yeah, I was already married that time.
Okay.
So I called my wife. We got married right before I went to Holland. So she's been through all of it. So I called her first. And my voice is trembling. And I'm like, hey, I made it. She's like, what? I made it. She came to North Dakota, because like I said, I played three games there. Mm. And so she was trapped. She was had come there with me. She had a job and everything. And I was like, baby, go ahead and pack everything up. come on to Miami. Because it was snowing, we had like feet of snow, like inches and inches of snow. Like, you don't get out of that cold, you don't come to Miami. But that was, I think, I don't know if we cried.
Yeah,
it was a little teary conversation.
I cried. You cried.
Shout out to the queen, man.
I'm so proud of you.
That's dope. It was a teary conversation, but that was. I called her first, and then called mom.
It was late at night when you called me too.
It was.
I was like in the bed asleep.
That's. That's super dope, man. That's super dope. So you get to go in this now. Now you're in there with the big boys. You get to practice. I mean, what was the practice like? That's what I want to know. What was that like, man? Because I know, again, you guys, was that, who was coaching at that time? Was
Spoelstra,
right? So Spoelstra, you got a lot of energy in that practice facility, man. How was that?
And I was intimidated at first because I feel like they had such high expectations, man. And I'm playing with, I already know it's a championship caliber team. We got LeBron there that you see, that I've seen on TV since St. Mary's, St. Vincent's, D-Wade since Marquette. Like, you have Udonis Haslem. I used to watch him at Florida. Mike Miller also. Like, so I'm intimidated at first, to be honest with you. But I'm just playing. I mean, it's picking up concepts and stuff and actually doing them are two different things. And they, like I said, they had high expectations. So they don't want to show you three, four, or five times how to do something. Or else you can go sit over there. He'll take from here. Mm. That was, I feel like that was pressure. Then you got Pat Riley as the president. So he would come and sit in the practice. I'm like, man, why he got to come sit? He went up for individual work. So I'm like, man, why he got to come sit here? He would come in and you would see that table sitting over there on the side. Like, yep, he coming in today. And with him, the president, and like the general manager or something like that would come and sit in practice. So that made it a little more intense. But I got accustomed to it really quickly. They pushed me. Like, I think that we worked on so much stuff. Like, I put in so much work in Miami as far as, like, I'll come in and do individual workouts before practice, like an hour or two before practice. And I'm in a full trench before practice even start. Dope. Because I would have to either do weights. You need to do weights before or after practice, and you got to get your individual workout in. So I'm getting what? At least 500 to 1,000 hook shots up a week. My shoulders at first would be like, I have to give me a little time to shake this off.
That's crazy.
It was hard work, but I really developed in Miami. My development coach, Keith Haskins, he was from Alabama too, so he's like, I want to see you playing. So he pushed me, even when I didn't want to do stuff or like I feel like I couldn't go any further. He really pushed me. Everybody has this perspective that he is like a hard coach to play for, a hard coach to work with, because when people come in for workouts, draft workouts, he's the one running. And you got everything's on the time limit. I like this what Coach Spoelstra did too. You got 1 minute for water. They said the clock. You actually got 1 minute for water. You come back and you get back to work. They want to make it as efficient as possible. Mm-hmm. So I like that part. I got used to it. And they, like I said, they made me a lot better.
That's super dope. And I see, what year right now are you going into overall, man? How many years have you put in overall as a pro?
12
years right now. Yeah. again, look at the resume, man. It's extensive, my brother. Like you got some dope places on here. Give me some other dope spots you've been to throughout this journey, man. Being able to travel in states and out of states, you know. Give me some other spots you may like really think you thought highly of while you was there.
All right, so Australia was my first place after the whole D League NBA stint. Australia was nice, man. As far as like living, the style of play, they made me a little tougher, because like you got rugby over there, like you got big boys. All they used to do is bumping. They play rugby from a young age, so it's like if people don't know what rugby is, it's football with no pads, basically. So that made me tougher, especially because when you go in there as an import, especially with that NBA stamp on you, mm-hmm. they gonna try to beat you up. I had a few times where I feel like somebody tried to take me out there, and sometimes where I got no calls for things that I feel like were obvious.
Yeah.
Like I remember one time I'm posting up, and I put my elbow up to just shield off my defender in order to get a mm-hmm. post entry pass. So I hit the guy in the face with like my forearm or something like that. They call a foul on me. I'm like, he's like, you have your arm in there. I'm like, I'm 6'11". How am I supposed to get the ball without putting my arm up? Like, right. So I hit him in the face. But as far as like living there, Australia was probably one of the best places. I've gone to Spain, which was good, especially as far as the league, the mm-hmm. competition. That's second to the NBA as far as competition. Like it's some really good players in Spain. As of course, as far as you see Paul Gasol, you see Marc Gasol, right. You see Ricky Rubio, you see now Luka Doncic. I played against him the year I played in Spain. You see Camposa, that's with the Denver Nuggets right now. I played against him. And Ricky Rubio. I mean him and what's his name again? But they were both on Real Madrid together.
Yeah.
So I played against the top competition. Randolph, he was over there. So you pretty much playing against guys. If they weren't in the NBA, they're going to the NBA, and they like kind of bouncing back and forth. So that was some really good competition. And Spain was a nice place to play. The fan love was awesome. Because right. even if I think we started off well, but we hit a slump, and then they fired our coach. So even during that whole time, our fans were still packed the gym out.
That's what's up. So you talk about Luka too. Back then, though, Luka was like, he was what, 16, 17 probably?
No, he was. This was maybe the year before, the year before,
right before,
or years before he got to the NBA.
Okay, he'd been playing pro for years.
17.
This is year. I think 18. Yeah, I think 18. Yeah. This is his third year, I believe. So,
yeah,
that's okay. That's crazy, man. That's super dope. So, again, that's a. I'm sure, and you said my wifey and stuff, the traveling, were you going to these other places, kind of, you had to pack to bring the family along, or it had to be solo and be separated at that point in time as far as a lot from the family-wise?
Oh, no. Pretty much everywhere I went, she went with me. But I think the D-League, well, she didn't go with me in the D-League for my first year. Rio mm-hmm. Grande and stuff like that. She was still in college and, like, finishing her degree up. But everywhere else she went, maybe she got all pretty much everything I got, she was there too. And so that was support of her being there. It brought a little bit of home with me.
Right.
Cause it's a lot different over there, man. Like, if you're there by yourself, especially as a young player
mm-hmm.
dealing with, acclimating to a new culture, sometimes people don't always speak English, especially, I mean, you have it on your teams. But I even had a guy on my team that spoke no English. So I spoke a little Spanish to him. We speak back and forth. Okay. So that's kind of how I picked up a little bit of language. But coming back from a tough game and you got to go back home and sit in the house by yourself, it takes a tough person to deal with that. You're going to have your ups and downs. But having her right there, always kind of grounding me and just even being there just to sit and talk or just to be there. Period, in
right.
body and in spirit. I mean, it helped a lot.
That's super dope, man. Before we get out of here, man, I'm going to give you your time a little bit, though. Just coming from where you come from, man, just if you could tell not just kids in your area or your family where you at, youngsters, but just youngsters in general, some tips, some pointers on what to do, how to handle stuff, man, some advice, what would you throw their way right now?
Don't despise humble beginnings. That's one of the main things you can kind of because like you said, me and you, we know how JUCO is. Not everybody has the best JUCO. Not everybody's gonna have your big practice facility with all this, these weights and shooting machines and all that kind of stuff, but it's what you make out of it. That's the main thing. Every experience I've been through has taught me that, because I've been some good places, I've been some not go so good places, but I've learned, like you hear what I said about Holland being my first experience as far as like the business of basketball. You got to have that perspective to try to learn somebody every situation you go through, and it helps you to grow as a person. And that's the most important thing, because after basketball, I'll still have these lessons with me. You will too, as a youngster.
Super dope. And I'm definitely got to give, I know you talked about the support system, man. Shout out to the support system for that process, because I mean, I can know some people overseas and friends, like it's not easy for athlete, as we know now, more so it's kind of visible, right? You can see athletes are expressing stuff to go through, but those backbones, those support systems definitely help a lot. Man, hey, I appreciate you taking time out today. Again, dope taking time, man. Dope story. Always, it was a pleasure, man. And you know, stay healthy. Keep growing. If you guys still at it, bro, keep grinding, man. Keep stay safe and get the bag, baby. As we say, secure the bag, man. Go get it, my man. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Have a good one, bro.
You too.
Peace.